Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, a magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about a charity which was established to provide food banks, which is now providing another vital service to its customers with the help of one of the national phone companies. Then our radio doctor will be giving us an update on the COVID-19 pandemic and what we should be doing about it at the moment. We'll also be hearing from a local music teacher who's providing music lessons for absolute beginners in the Brighton and Hove area. She's been doing so for several years, but she's just expanded her service. And finally, Citizens Advice, Brighton and Hove, will be telling us how we can safeguard ourselves from criminals who want to steal our money and our identities online. As usual, we'll be giving out various phone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing about the food bank charity, which has expanded its services. It's a charity called the Trussell Trust, and it was established back in 1997 to run food banks to help out with people who are destitute, and of course it's been very busy during the course of the pandemic. Well, they've set up a new venture in conjunction with Vodafone, which is known as Buy One, Give One. To find out more about it, I spoke to Sophie Carr from the Trussell Trust and Helen Lamprell from Vodafone. And I began by asking Sophie to tell me a bit more about the Trussell Trust.
The Trussell Trust are a charity that supports a network of over 1,300 food bank centres nationwide, and these centres provide emergency food and support to people experiencing crisis and financial struggles.
And do you just deal with food, or do you provide other services to them as well?
Our network is huge and very varied, but where they can, the food banks absolutely try to provide as much additional support and advice as possible to those coming to them. So people will receive a referral from a professional organisation or school or GP or the job centre so that they can go and collect some emergency food. And when they get there, the food bank will absolutely try and sit down with them, you know, have a cup of tea, have a friendly chat and talk to them about the sort of root cause of their journey to the food bank and be able to signpost them to the right organisations that can provide support and advice or potentially sort of income maximisation and support with application for benefits or access to a variety of local services as well. So they do in many ways go far beyond the food that they give people to take home.
Oh, that's great. Do I gather people have to be referred to you? They can't just sort of come in off the streets and ask for help?
Yes, they do. And we work with sort of over 40,000 referral agencies. And this really allows us to understand who and why people are being forced to turn to a food bank when they can't afford the essentials. So it gives us incredible data about what's really happening in communities across the UK.
How long has the Trussell Trust been in existence?
We were founded actually in Salisbury in 1997, so coming up to 22 years now, and it's really unbelievable actually, because 25 years ago food banks were unheard of, and last year alone our food banks distributed 2.5 million parcels to people in crisis. So it's been something that's been increasing more and more over the past sort of 20 years, but especially so in the past 5 years.
I suspect you'd prefer it if in fact it had been decreasing and you weren't needed any longer.
Yes, that's what we're here to do. We're here to sort of end the need for food banks and end hunger in the UK. We're all about sort of trying to put ourselves out of business, but we understand that there's a long road ahead, and what we need to do is work towards a future where people have enough income and access to support to be able to afford their own essentials.
Now, looking at your website, I see that you have five food banks in the area that is covered by Radio Reverb, and namely they're at Whitehawk, Hollingdean, Shoreham, Worthing and Littlehampton. Now, of course, in that area there are many other food banks run by organisations such as churches and local charities. Do you cooperate with them?
Of course, yes. I mean, food banks are incredibly well-connected organisations, and they work right throughout their community in terms of the different organisations that they connect with. And we, you know, while the Trust for Trust network represents about two-thirds of food banks in the UK, we absolutely work closely with independent food banks as well, so that we can ensure that, you know, we're meeting the need for emergency food where we can.
Okay, now coming to you, Helen, I gather that Vodafone has just launched a scheme called Buy One, Give One. Can you explain what that's about?
Yes, absolutely. So during the COVID pandemic, we saw this massive, massive need for extra connectivity, particularly school children and schools shut down. And we did a big project then called Schools Connected, where we got connectivity out to 750,000 children and young people in further education. And, you know, as the COVID crisis is hopefully coming to an end, we sort of were sitting there thinking, okay, well, that was brilliant. You know, does that mean we don't need to do this anymore? But we were looking at all this extraordinary data coming out from people like the ONS, from Ofcom, saying that there are a huge number of people living in digital poverty who don't have access to connectivity, you know, before the pandemic started. And I don't think that situation is going to have improved any over the last 12 months. So it seemed to us like this was a really good opportunity to turn our attention to helping those people and to trying to see whether we could close the digital poverty gap. It seems like a really big task. And sometimes when you face a big task, you're kind of like, wow, where are we going to even start? But actually, we think with this pledge to connect a million people who are living in digital poverty by the end of 2022, we think we can really make a big dent in the problem. We're working with Trussell Trust, but we're also really interested in working with other smaller charities. We're going to have a Charities Connected portal where other charities and organisations can reach out to us if they know people who are in need of connectivity as well. So, you know, with these initiatives, we are aiming to help a million people by the end of 2022.
And the scheme is to provide people who need it with a free SIM card loaded with 20 gigabytes of data. Is that right?
20 gigs of data and also voice and text, because we think it's really important that people, yes, have access to the internet, because lots of services are online, training's online, job opportunities often are online, but actually the ability to talk to people, to message people is also really, really important, A, for, you know, getting jobs, you know, phoning doctors, etc., but also just talking to your friends and family. When people are in a time of crisis, they, you know, not losing touch with the people who care about you is also really, really important.
But they have to provide their own phone, presumably.
Yes, this particular scheme doesn't cover devices, but we've also looked at that as an issue. So we're relaunching the Great British Tech Appeal. We ran that very successfully last year. We're going to be launching that in July again. Across a lot of radio stations in particular, we will be hoping to get that message out to people, because lots of people have devices sitting in their drawers at home. If they send them to us, we'll refurbish them, wipe all data off them, etc., make them usable again. So with that, we aim to be able to get devices out to people who need them as well.
Now, you're distributing the SIM cards via the Trussell Trust. How do you identify the people who need to receive a free SIM card?
We've talked about the referral system that we have that enables us to provide support and reach those who need it. So at the point of the food bank, the food banks who have requested the SIM cards from Trussell Trust will be able to sit down and discuss if connectivity is also an issue. And as the food banks do sit down and talk through all kinds of things to try and understand, you know, how people are struggling, or if there are other services or support functions that we can signpost them to, this will be part of that conversation as well. So at the food banks, they'll be able to sit down and understand who this will most benefit and make sure that they're able to provide it.
And presumably whoever refers them to you may well mention the fact that they could make use of this service as well.
Yes, so, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that we know that anyone who's forced to turn to a food bank for food is struggling in other areas as well, you know. So if you can't afford food, you're going to be struggling to pay your bills, you're going to be struggling with connectivity or to buy clothes or to transport. So we know that that's going to be, it's going to have a huge impact on communities and provide much needed connectivity to support people who are struggling to afford the essentials.
Now, is there any way that people who don't need to take up this service but would like to help out can do so.
Absolutely. I think if you'd like to help and find out a bit more about our work and where your local food bank is, if you go to trussletrust.org/find a food bank, you'll be able to find out where we operate in your local area and offer your support and sign up to volunteer or to donate food or to go down and say hello and understand a bit more about what's going on in your community.
And if anybody's interested, we've got all the details about the scheme on our website at vodafone.co.uk/everyone-connected.
Okay, well, thanks very much. It sounds like an excellent scheme. So I wish both organisations every success in the future.
Thank you very much. Lovely
talking
to you.
Thank you very much.
I was talking to Sophie Carr from the Trussell Trust and Helen Lamprell from Vodafone about the Buy One, Give One initiative that the two organisations are running at the moment. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to www.vodafone.co.uk/everyone-connected. That's www.vodafone.co.uk/everyone-connected. And just a reminder that Vodafone is spelt V-O-D-A-F-O-N-E. Don't be tempted to put a P-H in it. If you'd like to find out more about the Trussell Trust, and particularly about what they're doing near to you, you can go to their website, which is www.trusseltrust.org/get-help/find-a-foodbank. That's www.trusseltrust, and Trussell is spelt T-R-U-S-S-E-L-L, .org/get-help/find-a-foodbank. If you don't have access to the internet, you can phone the Trussell Trust on 01722 580178. That's 01722 580178.
This is Radio Reverb, Brighton's only truly local radio station, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, DAB digital radio, and online at www.radioreverb.com.
Now here's Chris English to introduce the next item.
Now, we've heard that the lockdown won't be eased as we expected, but hopefully it will be in a few weeks' time. Well, to find out how we can help make sure that happens, we're joined by Dr. Sarah Jarvis, who's no stranger to At Home This Morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Lovely to be with you as always.
Is it important that we continue to get this push to get vaccines in people's arms?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Vaccines are the way out of this pandemic. They are the best way to protect people from coronavirus. They've already saved over 14,000 lives just so far alone. And that's just in the UK. So, you know, there's no question that we are going to have to continue with this push. And the great news is that people are incredibly keen to do that. We've now, of course, opened up to everybody over the age of 18. So if it's you or if you've got kids or grandkids who are over 18, they can use the NHS booking service. They can call 119 free of charge anytime from 7 a.m. till 11 p.m., 7 days a week. And there are loads of pop-up centres coming up to try and speed that up.
So if there are younger people listening or older people who've got younger relatives, what should they encourage those youngsters to do?
I would absolutely say if you are 18 or over, it is in your interest as well as everyone else's to get yourself vaccinated. It is really encouraging to see the latest data which has come out, which suggests that 90% of 18 to 29 year olds are keen to get the vaccine. That has, you know, continued in the early stages. There are a few people going, yeah, but I'm not at huge risk. Well, you're not at huge risk of dying, but younger people can get long COVID. And if we are really going to continue to weaken and start breaking this link between cases and hospital admissions, we have got to get more vaccines into more young people's arms. And of course, everybody over the age of 40 is now able to reduce the length of time between their first and second vaccine from 12 to 8 weeks. So if you've had your first vaccine, your second one was booked 12 weeks from now, you can go online to the NHS website, and the online booking service will let you see earlier appointments before you cancel the original one, which is going to be really great so that you can be confident before you rebook and cancel your other one.
Now, we've heard in the news and on television details about the new variant. Should we be worried?
Well, the good news is that two doses of the vaccine provides really good levels of protection against hospitalisation. We've got new analysis from Public Health England, which shows that the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is 92% effective against hospitalisation at least 2 weeks after your second dose, and that the Pfizer-BioNTech is 96% effective. So the difference here, though, is that while you get good protection after the first dose, and indeed, interestingly, new data just out suggests that of the 800 people in hospital at the moment, which is double what we had a week ago, but it's not going up as fast as we might be worried about, and that 65% of those hadn't had any vaccination, 17% of them were at least 3 weeks after their first dose, and only 10% were 2 weeks after their 2 weeks plus after their second dose. Now, given that the people who have had the second doses are the ones who in previous years would have been vastly overrepresented among people in hospital, that is a really good indication of what great protection the second vaccine offers. But the Delta variant is more transmissible. So hands, face, space and fresh air have never been more effective, more important, whether you've been vaccinated or not.
We're seeing again on television, on the radio, about football matches and crowds around our streets and in football stadiums. Is that likely to be a situation where the disease is spread?
Well, it very much depends on whether or not they're going to be doing, you know, taking all the sensible precautions, and whether they're some of these pilot projects. So in the pilot projects, everybody has to have lateral flow testing before they get in. They're scheduling, they're staggering the admissions. And of course, with the big football stadia and things, they have got much, much more in the way of open air venues. And there's lots of hand sanitation. People are being encouraged to socially distance when they can, to stay in their seats, not mixing with lots of other people. But so this hands, face, space, fresh air, they're trying to bring as many of those elements into it as they can.
Are we seeing the back of it, do you think? Are we that far advanced?
Well, we are certainly not in a position where we can let down our guard. It has never been more important to continue to remember that, you know, doing things outside is much safer than doing things inside. And if you are inside, please do, you know, if you get caught outside because of the weather, please keep the windows open, because while inside is not as safe as outside, inside with fresh air is a great deal safer than inside without.
Looking to the future, do you think we've got this with us forever? Do you think we'll end up having a jab every year like we do with flu?
I think it's quite likely, certainly in the medium term, that that is going to be the case. We do know that once a virus stops being pandemic and becomes epidemic, then it doesn't offer the same level of risk to the population. But unfortunately, you know, one of the reasons that we are so keen for so many people to get vaccinated against flu is that we already have about 10 or 11,000 people per year in the UK who die from flu every year, and that's with a vaccine. It would be much higher if people weren't getting vaccinated. So I don't think there's any question that we've now got amazing new technology which will allow us to tweak the vaccines we've got. And they have been so well tested. Now they've been given, you know, the vaccines we've got have been rolled out to probably more people worldwide than any vaccine in the history of the world ever has. And therefore, we have so much data on safety. And we're going to be able to use that data, use the research that's been done, and tweak the vaccine in exactly the same way that we do for the flu virus going forward every year, so that we're getting the strains which are most likely to be a threat.
Here in Brighton and Hove, we've got one of the largest increases in new cases. Is that a cause for concern?
Well, I think it depends whether or not you're getting surge testing. We've just heard new surge testing being announced in Lambeth in South London and in Cumbria. We do know that at any time, any country, any part of the country could well end up with surge testing. And, you know, what we say is that regardless of where you are, it's a good idea to get the vaccine when it's offered to you. Try to meet outdoors rather than indoors. Keep 2 meters apart from people you don't live with and practice hands, face, face and fresh air. But if you end up in an area, a surge test area, then we really encourage people to get tested for free with PCR testing, because we want everyone to get into the habit of doing twice weekly lateral flow tests, which you can do at home. You can order the tests online. You can pick them up from the pharmacist. You can go to a test centre. But we want to get people to be in the habit of doing the home testing, the rapid access testing anyway. But if you end up in an area of concern, we encourage everyone to go and get PCR tested. That's the swab test that gets sent to the lab, because that way they can keep a track on the number of the variants of concern we've got.
So should we be concerned?
So I think the answer is that we need to, you know, if you've had your 2 vaccines, you should continue to be sensible and do all those things, but be very reassured that at least 2 weeks after your second vaccine, you are much, much less likely to end up in hospital or seriously ill with it.
Chris English was talking to Dr. Sarah Jarvis about the latest news on the COVID-19 pandemic. And Sarah's message was really that if at all possible, you should get a vaccination, as this is really the answer to keeping the virus under control. You can book an appointment to have the injection via the NHS website, which is at www.nhs.uk/conditions/coronavirus-covid-19. That's www.nhs.uk/conditions/coronavirus-covid-19. It's a good idea also to test yourself twice a week to see whether you might have picked up an infection, even if you have no symptoms. You can get test kits from the NHS website, well, they'll be sent to you by post, or from your local pharmacy, or from a COVID test site, and in all cases it's absolutely free. And the test is very easy to conduct at home. I know, because I've been doing it. If you can't use any of those methods to get hold of a test kit, you can phone the NHS helpline, which is 119. It's just that, 119 from any phone, and it's manned from 7 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, every day of the week.
On 97.2 FM and online at radioreverb.com, this is Radio Reverb, and you're listening to At Home This Morning, a programme for older listeners.
Well, you know the old saying about waiting ages for a bus and then several coming along at once. A week or two back, you may have heard me talking about a new scheme of online music tuition, which is being started by Brighton and Hove Music Department under the title Get Started. Well, another similar scheme was already running in Brighton. In fact, it's been running since 2013. This one is run by local music teacher Bella Emerson, and it's designed to take older people who've always wanted to play a string instrument, such as a violin, viola or cello, but have never actually had any lessons, and get them started on playing those instruments. It goes under the name of Silver Strings. Bella has recently expanded the scheme under the name of Music for Connection, and I recently spoke to her to find out more. I began by asking her to explain what the previous scheme, Silver Strings, was all about.
Silver Strings is the latest starter community string band. We set that up in 2013. The idea of that was that we'd rented a few violins, violas and cellos for people to come along for 9 weeks as a pilot, complete beginners, to see whether there was ever a cut-off time to learning an instrument. And here we are, 8 years later, finding absolutely that there's not the case. We've been running for the last year, mainly via Zoom. We had a couple of months so we could play outdoors, and we were outside at the Bright Helm. We've been at the Bright Helm since 2015. And amazingly, there are still 13 people who've been coming every single week via Zoom. We've only lost 3 people, and 2 of them are coming back when we can be in person again. I'm really looking forward to when we are back in person later in the month outdoors at the Brighthelm, all being well for the time being, and everybody being able to hear each other in real time and actually play together. It'll be wonderful. It'll be wonderful.
So Silver Strings is carrying on, but you've now started up something new, which is called Music for Connection.
Yeah.
How does that differ from Silver Strings?
Silver Strings is one of the projects that Open Strings Music runs. So Open Strings Music has been running in the city since 2014. And we have our dementia-friendly work, which has been funded by the NHS, which has been running since 2016. We also run sessions for mental health, and we also are part of the Ageing Well partnership in the city. And we run team-building sessions, sessions for refugees, and also sound archive sessions. So Open Strings Music is bigger than Silver Strings. Silver Strings is one of our projects. And those projects are saying the same, but the umbrella, Open Strings Music, is changing to Music for Connection. Because what we realised throughout the pandemic is that we worked really hard to kind of bring things that we've been doing in person on screen. We've run between 200 and 250 sessions during the pandemic, and we realised through doing that how important music making or listening or sound making together, or even listening, actively listening together, connects us as human beings. And to reflect that, we've changed our name so that more people can join in with what we do, that we can reach more people can be part of this, because through that connection is this greater sense of well-being through connecting with other people. And sometimes, I mean, particularly for some groups we work with, the sense of having something which isn't about talking or isn't about words can be really helpful as well. So that sense of creating together brings us into the moment, which is great, but also doesn't require us to talk. We don't make anybody do anything, so maybe people just want to tap their feet, or maybe people do want to make a sound, or there's a song they want to sing, and it means that we can do that together, which is really powerful. Really simple, really powerful.
Is it just string instruments that you deal with?
No, well, that's another reason we've changed our name. When we started all those years ago, it was strings because I'm a cello player. And initially we offered a lot of string projects. We still do offer string projects. That's always, that will always be part of what we do. But no, it's not just stringed instruments by any means. Over the pandemic, because not many people have conventional instruments in their home, we've been doing a lot with found sounds, for example. So finding objects around us that make particular sounds. So, for example, I've got my little notebook here. So if I can set up a rhythm with this. And maybe somebody wants to ping a glass or something, and all of a sudden you've got this lovely soundscape which is made up of everyday objects.
And the old tradition of playing the spoons, of course.
Well, absolutely, yeah. We've gone about as far as you can from conventional instruments, as well as this strong element of people being able to play stringed instruments together. So it's very versatile. It's a very versatile thing now. And there's a lot of singing. So we're now no longer Silver Strings or Silver Sings. So that, again, this sense of music and sound making and listening.
Now, you're mentioning lending people instruments. You have enough instruments to be able to lend out to all the people who want them, do you?
Well, certainly within sessions, we have enough instruments for people to use. For our musical box scheme, we have a lovely box of percussion instruments that goes out to people and gets changed once a month. So we will be doing that again when we can, when restrictions allow, and obviously everything is wiped down and safe. And so that's kind of like having a little resource pack that goes out, but we're not able to do that with the stringed instruments for practical reasons of people having a cello lying around in their house for a month. May not be quite as practical, but certainly for Silver Strings, for the Tuesday morning, we have an open session once a month, which is free for people to come to. They have to email first so I can bring along an instrument for them to try, but they can just see what it's like to meet people in the group who are all really friendly and have almost all started from scratch, so they understand what it can feel like to come along to something you've never tried before. And people can try an instrument out, and I will carry on bringing that instrument week by week if they decide to join. But we're not in a position where we're able to loan stringed instruments. However, Ackermans do a wonderful rental scheme, so people can rent instruments if they decide they want to try it out for a bit, and instruments do turn up to buy, of course.
And if people already have instruments, they can presumably bring them along.
Absolutely. So certainly with our older people's jam sessions, people have brought along all sorts of things. We've had a few string players, we've had guitarists, we've had a saxophone player. Somebody brought along a cajon, which is a drum. People bring along percussion. As I say, people play teacups sometimes or just bring their voices. It's wonderful. That's one of my favourite things, actually. when we experience the world through listening, it's surprising how many interesting sounds there are out there. I think we filter a lot of sounds out because we have to just get through the world without being sort of pulled into all these different sounds that happen. But when we give ourselves permission to actually hear and listen to everything that goes around, it's an ever-changing soundscape. It's fascinating.
Do your groups ever get as far as giving concerts?
Silver Strings, we've done quite a few performances over the years. So we've played the bandstand a couple of times. We've played in Pavilion Gardens a few times, which has been fantastic. Also at social centres, we played in the Pavilion. We played in Brighton Museum up on the balcony a couple of years ago now. And last year we had so many groups, we had performances that we had to postpone. So we've got nothing in the diary at the moment. But we're hoping as things emerge to be able to certainly have a couple of performances before the end of the year. We'll certainly have something at the Bright Helm because we always have a sort of little show and tell because it's sort of on our home turf, as it were. So nothing to tell your listeners about right now, but we will have it again. Watch this space.
Yes, well, please do keep me informed. So the big question, how do people find out more about the activities?
Well, we've got a brand new website, which we're really, really excited about. So that is www.musicforconnection.co.uk. Music for Connection is all one word and it's spelled F-O-R. If people want to contact me directly, they can email me. So I'm Bella and it's Bella with one L, B-E-L-A at musicforconnection.co.uk. And they can call us up 012-73-56-9096.
Oh, well, let's hope your phone is jammed with calls in the near future. Bella, thanks very much.
Thank you. Lovely to see you again.
I was talking to Bella Emerson about her new Music for Connection scheme. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to her website, which is musicforconnection.co.uk. That's Music for Connection, which is typed all as one word with no spaces, .co.uk. You can email her at Bella, which is spelled B-E-L-A, only one L, at musicforconnection.co.uk. That's Bella at musicforconnection.co.uk. Or you can phone her on Brighton 569096. That's 01273 569096.
This is Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, and you're listening to At Home This Morning, a programme for older listeners.
Well, now, the internet has altered all our lives very much over the last few years. It's an extremely useful tool. It can be like a big online encyclopedia, for example, and it can allow you to do all sorts of things from home that you wouldn't have been able to do before. But, like any tool, there are people around who want to use it for evil purposes. Just recently, there's been a rise in online scams, as they're called. Criminals pretending to be from your bank or from the police or another respected organisation like that and trying to trick you into giving them your bank details or to paying them money. Citizens Advice Brighton and Hove have just been running a campaign to help people be more aware of these scams, to learn to recognise them and to find out how they can avoid them. To find out more about this, I spoke to Alex Brining from Citizens Advice, Brighton and Hove, and I began by asking him to tell me what a scam is.
A scam is a scheme to try to steal money, personal information or data from a person or an organisation.
Are there any particular groups who are at risk of falling for these sort of things?
Something that we're highlighting in the campaign is that anyone can fall victim to a scam, anyone at all. It's important to be on your guard. If you're not sure about something, take your time and get advice. There are certain groups with an increased risk of being contacted by a scammer, and it tends to be those who can least afford it. People with a disability or a long-term illness can be more at risk than other groups. People who have been shielding over the last year or so, and people who've lost income due to coronavirus and losing work have been more likely to be contacted in the last year as well. It really can be people of all ages and backgrounds. But a really key message for us to get out there is for people to be wary, to be cautious, not to rush into decisions, because that's what can be exploited.
Okay, so what have you been highlighting in the scam awareness campaign?
Well, as we said, firstly, that it very much does affect everybody. That If you think someone might be trying to scam you, act straight away. That's really important. If you need advice and support, you can call the Citizens Advice Consumer Service, which is free phone. It's 0808-223-1133. That's 0808-223-1133. Or visit us online. That's the Citizens Advice Consumer Service. You should also report scams or suspected scams to Action Fraud. They have a website that covers all of this, and they've got a telephone number, which is 0300 123 2040.
Are those phone numbers available 24 hours a day?
The Citizens Advice Consumer Service isn't 24/7. It's Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. The Action Fraud service is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Something that we've seen in the last year has been a rise in scammers targeting people with finance-related schemes. So we're saying to people to be on the lookout for scams like get-rich schemes, for getting phone calls or texts or emails that are pretending to be from your bank, that are asking you to move your money or to provide your personal details, for scam emails or automated calls that are pretending to be from a government agency or an official company like your bank, or an offer for a pensions review that's out of the blue and unexpected.
What sort of things can people do to minimise the risk of being scammed?
There's some key tips that we're telling everybody we can to keep in mind, particularly when making decisions about money. Not to give money or bank details to anyone you don't know or have only met online. To be wary of unexpected contact. To be cautious of investment opportunities, particularly if they seem too good to be true. To seek professional advice before making any decisions about your money. To research who you're dealing with. Almost all financial services or firms are authorised by the Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA. And if they're not, it is probably a scam. You can search the Financial Conduct Authority's Financial Services Register online to see if a firm or an individual is authorised or registered with them. And to be extra careful if the contact is overseas. If you can't check the firm is authorised with a regulator in that country, don't transfer any money. The Financial Conduct Authority also has a warning list to check the risks of a potential investment. That's available on their website.
What do you know about scams in our area?
Our national charity, Citizens Advice, has done some research recently as part of this campaign. They found that 2 in 3 people in our area have been targeted by scammers so far. We know that scammers try and target us in lots of different ways. Over half of those in our area were targeted about a delivery text or email scam. And these are text messages you receive or emails that you receive that are pretending to be from a delivery carrier, Royal Mail or DPD or these other providers. The texts or emails claim that you've missed a delivery and ask for a small fee. And that is not just a matter of the fee that you give them, but also giving them your bank details. And they can then withdraw large amounts of money just as a result of that text message or that email. Over half of us have received such a scam attempt.
So you should never give out your bank details unless you're absolutely sure who you're giving them to.
Exactly so. That's a key thing to keep in mind.
In fact, it shouldn't be necessary in most cases because most people now have credit cards and that can be done that way if necessary. There are extra protections on those.
If you're going to make any kind of payment, do it through a debit card or a credit card. Like you say, Richard, that gives you extra protection.
Do you have any other tips or advice to help protect people from scams?
Oh, absolutely. There are a number of steps that we can all take to help protect ourselves from scams. Something that we've talked about is not being rushed into any quick decisions. If someone's asking you to do something immediately, that is a red flag. Make sure you take your time, find out about things, talk to people about it, get advice. As you were saying, Richard, don't be giving your money or personal details, whether that be a password or a bank detail, to anyone you don't know, who you don't trust or you've only met online. If someone's pressuring you for information, that's probably a scam. Before you buy anything as well, it's really good to do research. Check the website, check the company, and make sure it looks legitimate. There are details on Companies House, where all businesses are registered. You can search that for free very simply online. Paying by debit card and credit card, as we've just said, is an extra means of protection. Being wary, being a bit suspicious, because scammers can be really smart. Methods can be very sophisticated. It can look like a legitimate business or a website, and scammers say all the right things. So take your time to work out that it's a real organization and be confident of that. You can ask them for an ID. You can contact the organization on a number that you know and trust, not one that's been given to you. Other things, like if you're online, making sure that you've got up-to-date antivirus software to use strong passwords for email accounts that aren't used anywhere else. Choosing free random words is a good way to create a strong and memorable password. You can add in some numbers and or symbols at the end of those three words as well. And if you're not sure about anything, get advice from a trusted source, whether that be Citizens Advice, Trading Standards, Companies House, or somebody you know and trust.
If you think you've been the victim of a scam, what should you do?
We say there are three steps to take. If you've been scammed, if someone you know has been scammed, please keep in mind these three things. First, protect yourself from any further risk. There are things you can do pretty immediately to stop things getting worse. Contacting your bank or card provider immediately to let them know what's happened is really important. You should also change any login details, any passwords, so that no one can access things from then on. And if it was on a computer that you've been scammed, check for viruses or ask someone to help you with that. That's important too. Then secondly, check if you can get that money back. We know lots of people who are able to recover what's been taken. If you paid something by card, by bank transfer, direct debit or PayPal, depending on the circumstances, you might be able to get your money back with their help. The third thing to do is to report the scam. This helps authorities stop the criminals responsible and protect others from being scammed by the same scammers or similar schemes. Anyone who's been scammed, I would urge to contact Citizens Advice Consumer Service. That's free phone 0808 223 1133. There's lots of information online as well, and we pass on details of scams to Trading Standards and can offer advice through all of these processes. You should also report scams to Action Fraud. They're available 24/7 on 0300 123 2040. That's the National Reporting Centre for Fraud. They can also give a crime reference number, and that can be helpful if you're in discussion with your bank about recovering funds or about generally being scammed. We also always emphasise how important it is to talk to others about it so that we can all pick up on scams and frauds in our communities with our families and friends. Together we can put a stop to scams.
Would it be an idea to tell the police as well?
Action Fraud is actually a function or service provided with the police. If you look at their website, it's actionfraud.police or something. So it is part of that service. That's why they can issue you with a crime reference number.
Okay, well, it's not a particularly safe world online, but all the things you've mentioned can help us to protect ourselves.
That's it. There's lots of information online about protecting from risks online, but make sure that you get advice from somewhere you trust before taking any action, like giving your information away.
Right, I should be even more careful in the future. Alex, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Richard. Appreciate your time.
I was talking to Alex Brining of Citizens Advice, Brighton and Hove. And that brings our programme to an end for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in 4 weeks. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items we might like to cover, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us via the Radio Reverb website, where you can also listen again to this programme and to other editions of At Home This Morning. If you go to the website, which is www.radioreverb.com, and click on Listen Again, you'll bring up a list of programmes to which you can listen. All that remains for me now is to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme, once again to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.